Chapter 3, Introduction to the Basics of Flight. The basic principles discussed in this chapter explain and establish the fact that an airplane is a stable, controllable flying machine, and why it can and will fly. To many people, flying machines seem complex and mysterious. Indeed, the technical details are complex, but behind the technology are basic principles that can be easily understood by anyone. A complete and detailed discussion of the technology and aerodynamic principles is beyond the scope of this chapter. For those persons seeking the more advanced pilot ratings, particularly flight instructors and those who have a need or desire to learn more about aerodynamics, the last chapter in this handbook is devoted to the more technical aspects of airplane design and characteristics, and the physical forces and conditions that affect flight. The long span of years between man's initial dream of flying and the final accomplishment was broken intermittently by the feats of the aeronauts or balloonists. In the latter 18th century, the Montgolfier brothers of France first ascended into the air, and the observation balloon was quickly adapted to battle in the Franco-Austrian Wars. The United States also first used the observation balloon to great advantage during the war between the states. But it was not the same as free flight. Man remained discontent as a captive dangling beneath the silk of a balloon. The pioneer pilots, Montgomery, Lilienthal, and Chanute, made short flights in gliders, but they were brief and frustrating, for these men were unable to sustain flight and were forced back to Earth against their will. It was up to the Americans, Orville and Wilbur Wright, to approach it scientifically and to succeed. They built a wind tunnel, experimented with models, and learned much about wing curves, lifting forces, air resistance, and efficient wing design. Because of this careful research and intelligent study, the gulls circling the sand dunes at Kitty Hawk in the winter of 1903 saw a man and a machine rise and conquer the sky for a historic 12 seconds. The Wright brothers studied their model planes in the wind tunnel, learning the laws of physics which aided or prevented flight, and then learned how they could use the helpful forces and overcome the inhibiting forces. In a similar manner, the discussions of this chapter provide the learning pilot of today with the basic facts of flight before actually beginning to fly. Throughout the history of aviation, science and technology have produced many different types of aircraft. However, only the facts of flight that relate to the typical light plane used in general aviation will be discussed here. Theories of flight. A balloon rises in the air because it is filled with a gas which is lighter than the air around it. But an airplane, being heavier than the air surrounding it, cannot float as does a balloon. Consequently, it must get its lift in a different manner. In effect, it must do something to the air surrounding it to make the air support its greater weight. To act on the airplane must be placed in motion. The majority of general aviation type airplanes employ a reciprocating engine to turn a propeller that bites into the air, forcing the air backward while pulling the airplane forward. This leads our discussion to several basic laws of physics that help in explaining how an airplane flies. The English philosopher and mathematician Sir Isaac Newton is credited with having observed in 1687 that for every action there is an equal and opposite reaction. This principle applies whenever two things act upon each other, such as the air and the propeller, or the air and the wing of an airplane. In short, the statement about action and reaction tells us how lift and propulsion of airplanes are produced. The only way air can exert a force on a solid body, such as an airplane's wing, is through pressure. In the 1700s, Daniel Bernoulli, a Swiss mathematician, discovered that if the velocity of a fluid or air is increased at a particular point, the pressure of the fluid or air at that point is decreased. The airplane's wing is designed to increase the velocity of the air flowing over the top of the wing as it moves through the air. To do this, the top of the wing is curved while the bottom is relatively flat. The air flowing over the top travels a little further, since it is curving, than the air flowing along the flat bottom. This means the air on top must go faster. Hence the pressure decreases, resulting in a lower pressure, as Bernoulli stated, on top of the wing and a higher pressure below. The higher pressure then pushes or lifts the wing up toward the lower pressure area. At the same time, the air flowing along the underside of the wing is deflected downward. As stated in Newton's theorem, for every action there is an equal and opposite reaction. Thus, the downward deflection of air reacts by pushing or lifting the wing upward. This is like the planing effect of a speedboat or water skier skimming over the water. To increase the lift, the wing is tilted upward in relation to the oncoming air or relative wind to increase the deflection of air. Relative wind during flight is not the natural wind, but is the direction of the airflow in relation to the wing as it moves through the air. The angle at which the wing meets the relative wind is called the angle of attack. These two natural forces, pressure and deflection, produce lift. The faster the wing moves through the air and the greater the two forces become, the more lift is developed. Another of Newton's theorems can be used to explain just how much air deflection is needed to lift an airplane. This law of motion says, the force produced will be equal to the mass of air deflected multiplied by the acceleration given to it. From this, we can see the way lift, speed, and angle of attack are related. The amount of lift needed can be produced by moving a large mass of air through the process of making a small change in velocity, or by moving a small mass of air through the process of making a large change in velocity. For example, at a high speed where the wing affects a large amount of air, only a small angle of attack is needed to deflect the air a small amount. Conversely, at low speeds during which the wing affects a lesser amount of air, a larger angle of attack is needed to deflect the air a large amount. Thus, the angle of attack at various speeds must be such that the deflection of air is adequate for the amount of lift needed. If the airplane speed is too slow, the angle of attack required will be so large that the air can no longer follow the upper curvature of the wing. This results in a swirling, turbulent flow of air over the wing and spoils the lift. Consequently, the wing stalls. On most airplanes, this critical angle of attack is about 15 to 20 degrees. Stalls will be thoroughly explained in the chapter on proficiency flight maneuvers. As noted earlier, when the propeller rotates, it bites into the air, thereby providing the force to pull or push the airplane forward. This forward motion causes the airplane to act on the air to produce lift. The propeller blades, just like a wing, are curved on one side and straight on the other side. Hence, as the propeller is rotated by the engine, forces similar to those of the wing create lift in a forward direction. This is called thrust. Up to this point, the discussion has related only to the lifting force. Before an understanding of how an airplane flies is complete, other forces must be discussed. Forces acting on the airplane. While the airplane is propelled through the air and sufficient lift is developed to sustain it in flight, there are certain other forces acting at the same time. Every particle of matter, including an airplane, is attracted downward toward the center of the Earth by gravitational force. The amount of this force on the airplane is measured in terms of weight. To keep the airplane flying, lift must overcome the weight or gravitational force. The development of lift and thrust was explained earlier. Another force that constantly acts on the airplane is called drag. It is the resistance created by the air particles striking and flowing around the airplane when it is moving through the air. Airplane designers are constantly trying to streamline wings, fuselages, and other parts to reduce the rearward force of drag as much as possible. The part of drag caused by form resistance and skin friction is termed parasite drag, since it contributes nothing to the lift force. A second part of the total drag force is caused by the wing's lift. As the wing deflects air downward to produce lift, the total lift force is not exactly vertical, but is tilted slightly rearward. This means that it causes some rearward drag force. This drag is called induced drag and is the price paid to produce lift. The larger the angle of attack, the more the lift force on the wing tilts toward the rear and the larger the induced drag becomes. To give the airplane forward motion, the thrust must overcome drag. In a steady flight condition, no change in speed or flight path, the always present forces that oppose each other are also equal to each other, that is, lift equals weight and thrust equals drag. Another force which frequently acts on the airplane is centrifugal force. However, this force only occurs when the airplane is turning or changing the direction, horizontally or vertically, of the flight path. Newton's law of energy states that a body at rest tends to remain at rest, and a body in motion tends to remain moving at the same speed and in the same direction. Thus, to make an airplane turn from straight flight, a sideward, inward force must act on it. The tendency of the airplane to keep moving in a straight line and outward from a turn is the result of inertia, and it results in centrifugal force. Therefore, some impeding force is needed to overcome this centrifugal force so the airplane can move in the desired direction. The lift of the wings provides this counteracting force when the airplane's wings are banked in the desired direction. This is further discussed in this chapter in the section on turning flight. Since the airplane is in a banked attitude during a properly executed turn, the pilot will feel the centrifugal force by increased seat pressure rather than the feeling of being forced to the side as is experienced in a rapidly turning automobile. The amount of force, or G-force, felt by seat pressure depends on the rate of turn. The pilot will, however, be forced to the side of the airplane as in an automobile if a turn is improperly made or the airplane is made to slip or skid. One other force which will affect the airplane during certain conditions of flight and which will be frequently referred to in the discussions on various flight maneuvers is torque effect or left-turning tendency. It is probably one of the least understood forces that affect an airplane. Torque effect is the force which causes the airplane to have a tendency to swerve or yaw to the left and is created by the engine and propeller. There are four factors which contribute to this yawing tendency. 1. Torque reaction of the engine and propeller. 2. The propeller's gyroscopic effect. 3. The corkscrewing effect of the propeller or slipstream. And 4. The asymmetrical loading of the propeller. It is important that pilots understand why these factors contribute to torque effect. One of Newton's laws states, "For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction." Hence, the rotation of the propeller with a clockwise movement, as viewed from the cockpit, tends to roll or bank the airplane in a counterclockwise to the left direction. This can be understood by visualizing a rubber band-powered model airplane. Wind the rubber band in a manner that it will unwind and rotate the propeller in a clockwise direction. If the fuselage is released while the propeller is held, the fuselage will rotate in a counterclockwise direction, looking from the rear. This effect of torque reaction is the same in a real propeller-driven airplane, except that instead of the propeller being held by hand, its rotation is resisted by air. This counter-rotational force causes the airplane to try to roll to the left. It will be noted in the case of a real airplane that the force is stronger when power is significantly advanced while the airplane is flying at very slow airspeed. The second factor that causes the tendency of an airplane to yaw to the left is the gyroscopic properties of the propeller. Here we are concerned with gyroscopic precession, which is the resultant action or deflection of a spinning object when a force is applied to the outer rim of its rotational mass. When a force is applied to the object's axes, it is the same as applying the force to the outer rim. If the axis of a spinning gyroscope, propeller in this case, is tilted, the resulting force will be exerted 90 degrees ahead in the direction of rotation and in the same direction as the applied force. That force will be particularly noticeable during takeoff in a tailwheel type airplane if the tail is raised rapidly from a three-point to a level flight attitude. The abrupt change of attitude tilts the horizontal axis of the propeller, and the resulting precession produces a forward force on the right side, 90 degrees ahead in the direction of rotation, yawing the airplane's nose to the left. The amount of force created by this precession is directly related to the rate at which the propeller axis is tilted when the tail is raised. The third factor that causes the airplane's left yawing tendency is the corkscrewing of the propeller slipstream acting against the side of the fuselage and tail surfaces. The high-speed rotation of an airplane propeller results in a corkscrewing rotation to the slipstream as it moves rearward. At high propeller speeds and low forward speed, as in the initial part of a takeoff, the corkscrewing flow is compact and imposes considerable side force on the airplane. As the airplane's forward speed increases, the corkscrew motion of the slipstream loosens or elongates, resulting in a straighter flow of air along the side of the fuselage toward the airplane's tail. When this corkscrewing slipstream strikes the side of the fuselage and the vertical tail surface at air speeds less than cruising, it produces a yawing moment, which tends to revolve the airplane around its vertical axis. Since in most U.S.-built airplanes, propeller rotation is clockwise as viewed from the cockpit, the slipstream strikes the vertical tail surface on the left side, thus pushing the tail to the right and yawing the nose of the airplane to the left. The fourth factor which causes the left yawing tendency is the asymmetrical loading of the propeller, frequently referred to as P-factor. When an airplane is flying with a high angle of attack, with the propeller axis inclined, the bite of the downward-moving propeller blade is greater than the bite of the upward-moving blade. This is due to the downward-moving blade meeting the oncoming relative wind at a greater angle of attack than the upward-moving blade. Consequently, there is greater thrust on the downward-moving blade on the right side, and this force causes the airplane to yaw to the left. At low speeds, the yawing tendency caused by P-factor is greater because the airplane is at a high angle of attack. Conversely, as the speed of the airplane is increased and the airplane's angle of attack is reduced, the asymmetrical loading decreases and the turning tendency is decreased. Stability and controllability. Besides being supported in flight by lift and propelled through the air by thrust, an airplane must be stable and controllable since it is free to revolve or move around three axes. These axes may be thought of as axles around which the airplane revolves, much like a wheel does. Each axis is perpendicular to the other two, and all three intersect at the airplane's center of gravity, or CG. The point around which the airplane's weight is evenly distributed or balanced is considered the CG of the airplane. The axis which extends lengthwise through the fuselage from the nose to the tail is the longitudinal axis. The axis extending through the fuselage from wingtip to wingtip is the lateral axis. The axis which passes vertically through the fuselage at the center of gravity is the vertical axis. Rotation about the airplane's longitudinal axis is roll, rotation about its lateral axis is pitch, and rotation about its vertical axis is yaw. Because of their ability to revolve about these axes, all airplanes must possess stability in varying degrees for safety and ease of operation. An unstable airplane would require that the pilot continually vary pressures on the flight controls and consequently would be difficult to control. The term stability means the ability of the airplane to return of its own accord to its original condition of flight or the normal flight attitude after it has been disturbed by some outside force. A ball in a round bowl is considered stable because after being pushed to one side, it will roll back and forth until it finally comes to rest at the center of the bowl. If an arrow having no feathered tail is shot from a bow, it usually will wobble or fall end over end as it travels, since there is no force produced to bring it back to its original point first travel. The arrow is made stable, however, by adding pieces of feather near the rear of its shaft. Then, when the arrow is shot and begins to wobble, turn, or yaw, the air strikes the tail feathers at an angle and deflects the feathered end of the shaft to turn the arrow back to a straight path. This corrective action continues as long as the arrow has sufficient forward motion. An airplane wing by itself is also unstable. It would flip over and continue to flip end over end as it flutters to the ground. Like the unstable arrow,
The unstable wing needs some kind of tail feathers to balance it and keep it on a straight course. Like the stable arrow, airplanes have their tail feathers in the form of horizontal and vertical surfaces located at the rear of the fuselage. These surfaces are the horizontal stabilizer and the vertical stabilizer or fin. If all the upward lift forces on the wing were concentrated in one place, there would be established a center of lift, which is usually called center of pressure or CP. In addition, if all the weight of the airplane were concentrated in one place, there would be a center of weight, or as it is termed, center of gravity or CG. Rarely, though, are the center of pressure and center of gravity located at the same point. The locations of these centers in relation to each other have a significant effect on the stability of the airplane. If the center of the wing's lifting force, or CP, is forward of the airplane's center of gravity, or CG, the airplane would always have a tendency to nose up and would have an inherent tendency to enter a stalled condition. Therefore, most airplanes are designed to have their CG located slightly forward of the CP to create a nose-down tendency, so the airplane will have a natural tendency to pitch downward away from a stalled condition. This provides a safety feature in the characteristics of the airplane.
While the airplane is flying within its range of normal speeds, the airflow exerts a downward force on the horizontal stabilizer, thus at normal speed, it partially offsets the inherent nose heaviness of the airplane. In addition, many airplanes have the line of thrust located lower than the CG. In this situation, the propeller's thrust provides a nose-up pitching force to help overcome the inherent nose heaviness. With this balanced condition, the airplane characteristically will remain in level flight. However, when the power is reduced and the airspeed is decreased, the airflow exerts less downward force on the horizontal stabilizer. At the same time, the nose-up force of thrust is also decreased. Due to this unbalanced condition, the airplane's nose will tend to lower and the airplane will enter a descent of its own accord. During the descent, the airspeed will begin increasing. As a result, the downward force increases on the horizontal stabilizer, causing the nose to rise. This process will continue again and again if the airplane is dynamically stable and if the pilot takes no action to stop it. But with each oscillation, the nose-up and nose-down motion becomes less and less. Eventually, the airplane's descent attitude and airspeed will stabilize. Like the feathered arrow, the most important factor producing directional stability is the weather vaning effect created by the fuselage and the vertical fin of the airplane. It keeps the airplane headed into the relative wind. If the airplane yaws or skids, the sudden rush of air against the surface of the fuselage and fin quickly forces the airplane back to its original direction of flight. Generally, in straight and level flight, the wings on each side of the airplane have identical angles of attack and are developing the same amount of lift. This laterally balanced condition normally keeps the airplane level. Occasionally, though, a gust of air will upset this balance by increasing the lift on one wing and cause the airplane to roll around its longitudinal axis. A well-designed airplane has certain design features to counteract this momentarily unbalanced condition and return the airplane to a wing's level attitude. Most airplanes are designed so that the outer tips of the wings are higher than the wing roots attached to the fuselage. The upward angle thus formed by the wings is called dihedral, and is usually only a few degrees. The rolling action of an airplane caused by gusts is constantly being corrected by the dihedral of the wings. If one wing gets lower than the other when the airplane is flying straight, it will have a different attitude in relation to the oncoming air. The result is that the lowered wing has a greater angle of attack and thus more lift than the raised wing and consequently will rise. If this rising action causes the wing to go past the level attitude, the opposite wing will then have a greater angle of attack and more lift. A dynamically stable airplane will oscillate less and less and eventually will return to its original position as the oscillation dampens. Although stability in an airplane is desirable, it must not be so strong that the pilot cannot overcome the inherent stability. The pilot must be able to control or maneuver the airplane at will about the airplane's three axes. Roll, pitch, and yaw, the motions of an airplane about its longitudinal, lateral, and vertical axes are controlled by the three control surfaces. This will be discussed in the chapter on the effect and use of controls. Turning flight. An airplane, like any moving object, requires a sideward force to make it turn. In a normal turn, this force is supplied by banking the airplane so that lift is exerted inward as well as upward. The force of lift is thus separated into two components at right angles to each other. The lift acting upward and opposing weight is called the vertical lift component. The lift acting horizontally and opposing inertia or centrifugal force is called the horizontal lift component. Thus, the horizontal lift component is the sideward force that forces the airplane from straight flight and causes it to turn. The equal and opposite reaction to this sideward force is centrifugal force. If an airplane is not banked, no force is provided to make it turn unless the turn is skidded by rudder application. Likewise, if an airplane is banked, it will turn unless held on a constant heading with opposite rudder. Proper control technique assumes that an airplane is turned by banking and that in a banking attitude it should be turning. Banking an airplane in a level turn does not by itself produce a change in the amount of lift. However, the division of lift into horizontal and vertical components reduces the amount of lift supporting the weight of the airplane. Consequently, the reduced vertical component results in the loss of altitude unless the total lift is increased by 1. Increasing the angle of attack of the wing, 2. Increasing the airspeed, or 3. Increasing the angle of attack and airspeed in combination. Assuming a level turn with no change in thrust, the angle of attack is increased by raising the nose until the vertical component of lift is equal to the weight. The greater the angle of bank, the weaker is the vertical lift component, and the greater is the angle of attack for the lift-weight balance necessary to maintain a level turn. Climbing flight. For an automobile to go uphill at the same speed that was being maintained on a level road, the driver must step on the gas, that is, power must be increased. This is because it takes more work to pull the car's weight up the hill and to maintain the same speed at which the car was moving along the level road. If the driver did not increase the power, the automobile might still climb up the incline, but it would gradually slow down to a speed slower than at which it was moving on the level road. Similarly, an airplane can climb at the cruise power setting with a sacrifice of speed, or it can, within certain limits, climb with added power and no sacrifice in speed. Thus, there is a definite relationship between power, attitude, and airspeed. When transitioning from level flight to a climb, the forces acting on the airplane go through definite changes. The first change, an increase in lift, occurs when back pressure is applied to the elevator control. This initial change is the result of the increase in the angle of attack which occurs when the airplane's pitch attitude is being raised. This results in a climbing attitude. When the inclined flight path and the climb speed are established, the angle of attack and the corresponding lift again stabilize at approximately the original value. As the airspeed decreases to the climb speed, the downward force of the air striking the horizontal stabilizer becomes less, creating a longitudinally unbalanced condition which produces a tendency for the airplane to nose down. To overcome this tendency and maintain a constant climb attitude, additional back pressure must be applied to the elevator control. The primary factor which affects an airplane's ability to climb is the amount of excess power available, that is, the power available above that which is required for straight and level flight. During the climb, lift operates perpendicularly to the flight path so that it is not directly opposing gravity to support the airplane's weight. With the flight path inclined, the lift is partially acting rearward, creating what is termed induced drag. This adds to the total drag. Since weight is always acting perpendicular to the Earth's surface, and drag is acting in a direction opposite to the airplane's flight path during a climb,
it is necessary for thrust to overcome both drag and gravity. Descending flight. When the power is reduced during straight and level flight, the thrust needed to balance the airplane's drag is no longer adequate. Due to the unbalanced condition, the drag causes a reduction in airspeed. This decrease in speed, in turn, results in a corresponding decrease in the wing's lift. The weight of the airplane now exceeds the force of lift, so the resulting flight path is downward as well as forward. Since the flight path is inclined downward, the force of gravity is providing the forward thrust. In effect, the airplane is actually going downhill. As in entering a climb, the forces acting on an airplane again go through definite changes when transitioning from level cruising flight to a descent. When forward pressure is applied to the elevator control or the airplane's pitch attitude is allowed to lower, the wing's angle of attack is decreased, the lift is reduced, and the flight path starts downward. This change in the flight path is the result of the lift becoming less than the weight of the airplane as the angle of attack is reduced. This unbalance of lift and weight causes the airplane to descend with respect to the horizontal path of level flight. The initial reduction of lift, which starts the airplane downward, is momentary. When the flight path stabilizes, the angle of attack again approaches the original value, and lift and weight stabilize. Just as in climbing flight, the downward force on the horizontal stabilizer becomes less as the airspeed decreases. This produces an unbalanced condition, which results in a tendency for the airplane to nose down. In order to maintain the desired descent attitude, it is usually necessary to apply slight back pressure on the elevator control. As the descent is started, the airspeed may gradually increase due to a component of weight now acting forward along the flight path. The overall effect is that of increased thrust, which in turn would cause the airspeed to increase if the power were allowed to remain the same as that used for level cruise flight. For descent at the same airspeed as flown in level cruise flight, the power must be reduced as the descent begins. The component of weight acting forward along the flight path increases as the descent attitude is steepened, and conversely will decrease as the descent attitude is shallowed. Therefore, the amount of power reduction for a descent at cruising speed will be determined by the rate of descent desired.